I heard Andy give a message a couple months ago that was just extraordinary. And I thought, man, I want Brownsbridge to hear this. And at first I thought, you know what, maybe we'll just show the video of it. And then I just said, well, you know, maybe he can come be with us. And I asked Andy, I said, hey, will you come speak live at Brownsbridge? And he said, yes. So would you guys please give a big Brownsbridge welcome back to the Brownsbridge stage, Andy Stanley.
Thank you. It is great to be back, and it has been too long, and not because Adam hasn't invited me, so this is so cool. Hey, before I jump in, though, and I'm so excited about this, I want to welcome a group that you may not know joins Brownsbridge Church just about every single weekend, especially during the winter. That's Cypress Trail Community Church. I want to give, you guys should give yourself a hand over at Cypress Trail. So let me tell you about Cypress Trail. They're in Fort Myers, Florida. This is a group of people who travel all over the country in RVs, and in the winter, they head to Florida. And there was one couple who was watching our church online, and they invited another couple to watch online because they kind of hunker down, you know, they're in Florida. And now, sometimes they have like 100 people, and so they started a church. And so anyway, and they watch the Brownsbridge feed because of their connection to this church. So I just want to say welcome to Brownsbridge for those of you who are watching today. And I want to extend an invitation. Yeah, you welcome them. Here they are, yep. So if you're coming through Atlanta or even close to Atlanta, get on 400 and keep going and come up to Cumming and drop in and say hello live. We'd love to see you, but thanks for joining us. And I wanted to share that with you because it has something to do with what we're going to talk about. I want to thank Adam and Kelly and the great leadership here at Brownsbridge and what you continue to do. And what I want to talk about today, I want to make sure I couch this the right way. What I'm going to talk about is not a, hey, get with it. Honestly, this is a, hey, keep going, okay? Because what you're doing is absolutely extraordinary. And again, I shared some of these thoughts at North Point a few, not too long ago. And if this is your first time at Brownsbridge, or maybe your first time in church after being out for a while, or you haven't been in a long time, this is the perfect Sunday to be here, the perfect Sunday to be watching, because I'm gonna talk a little bit about why and how we do what we do here, and why and how we do what we do has a lot to do with you. So I'm so glad. We have a phrase that we say a good bit around here, and that following Jesus has made our lives better and made us better at life. I created this, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. Personally, I decided I needed an elevator pitch for my faith. In other words, somebody says, well, Andy, why are you a Christian? Which no one ever asked me that, but I wish they would. But in terms of, you know, what's my one-liner? And my one-liner is, honestly, at my age, season of life, following Jesus has made my life better. And following Jesus has made me better at life. I'm a better father, a better husband, a better friend. I know I don't have to imagine what my life would be like apart from Jesus. I know, just like you do. And so we say this around here because those of us who have chosen not just to believe some stuff, but to actually follow Jesus, it's true. It's made our lives better, and it's made us better at life. So consequently, the mission of Brownsbridge Church, the mission of our churches, is to inspire people to follow Jesus. In other words, we want to inspire people who believe and people who don't believe to follow Jesus. So if this is your first time with us or first time watching, that's our agenda. We want to put it right out there. And what I want to talk about today is some things that to keep in mind to ensure that we continue to do that as a group of local churches and as a local church, because this applies to a lot of things. If you don't know why something's working when it's working, it's very difficult to fix it when it breaks. If you don't know why something's working when it's working, it's very difficult to fix it when it breaks. So sometimes it's important to do an autopsy on your success. Everybody does an autopsy on their failure. If things start kind of getting rattled in your marriage or with one of your kids or at work, or you know, if your car breaks down, I mean, that's when you start to get focused, like, hey, what went wrong? But sometimes it's important, in fact, I think a lot of times it's important to try to figure out why things are working when they're working. So what you're doing is fabulous. I just decided a few months ago, as Adam said, to just sit down with North Point and say, hey, let's keep doing the things, the blocking and tackling that make this work. So that's really what I want to talk about. So going back 28 years ago, before some of you were born, 28 years ago, we launched our organization that Brownsbridge Church is a part of. And we started a church, and we didn't start a church because Atlanta needed another church. Atlanta did not need another church. We decided, there was a group of us that decided that Atlanta needed a different kind of church. an outward-facing church, a church that was more concerned with the people who weren't there than the people who were there, not to the neglect of the people who were there, but an outward-facing church that says, hey, we want people who are far from God, people who have church hurt, people who have big questions, people who don't feel like they're church people, to come into an environment where they feel welcome, where they can say, hey, I'm not sure I believe it, but I like these people, a place to belong before they believe. We want that for students, for children, for adults. We just decided to create a different kind of church. So we bought some property in Alpharetta. We built a building. We built an auditorium. We built a second auditorium. We ran out of space. And then we realized there were hundreds of people coming from north of Alpharetta to our church in Alpharetta at North Point. And so a group of people got together and purchased this amazing property raised some money. A lot of you gave a lot of money. A lot of you were attending North Point knowing we're going to build this church out here. And plans were drawn and concrete poured, nail by nail, board by board. Daddy gave life to Mama's dreams. No Miranda Lambert fans. Any Miranda Lambert fans? Yes. That's like one of my favorite songs. It just paints such a picture. Some of you are like, what's he talking about? Anyway, people say that all the time. Anyway, so Browns Bridge Church was born. In fact, the very first service was October the 8th, 2006. Anybody here October the 8th, 2006, were here for that first service? Yeah, six people in the front. That's great. I can't see much past the first six rows. So anyway, and the goal, every time we created a church, was to create a church that unchurched people would love to attend. That people who, again, with big questions, big church hurt, big problems, their life's a mess, or maybe their life is perfect, but they just feel like there must be more. We wanted people to show up and like it, even if they didn't necessarily believe it all. But here's the challenge, and here's why I'm here today. The gravitational pull of the local church is always toward the people who are already there. That's never gonna change. The gravitational pull of the local church is always to focus on the insiders, the believers, the people. I say John 11, you say Lazarus. You know what a testament is. You know what an old and a new. You can make your way through the Bible. The people who've sort of got it all figured out. And sometimes, over time, churches begin to neglect the people who don't have it all figured out, whose lives are still kind of messy, who don't fit the normal categories, who have questions that the church doesn't want to answer, or at times just kind of gives sugar pill answers that here's a verse and figure that out. And the gravitational pull is toward the people on the inside. That's never going to change. And the reason we started 28 years ago is we didn't want to be that kind of church. But the pull is always to be that kind of church. So every once in a while, with our staff and today with you, and as Adam said a few months ago with North Point, I just feel like it's important to say, okay, do we know why this works while it's working? Because we don't want it to break. In other words, we want to make sure we continue to do the things that created an outward-facing church to begin with, so that the next generation of church leaders at Browns Bridge or at any of our churches understand the marching orders and understand how to do this, so that we don't give in to the gravitational pull of just paying attention to people who are already have their lives together and are consider themselves church people. Or Christians in general. And here's the thing. If you came to faith at Browns Bridge Church because somebody invited you and you didn't bounce off, you felt like, well, I can handle this, I'll come back. You're so grateful that this has been an outward-facing church. And if you've invited a friend or family member or maybe a neighbor, and they kind of said, no, and they finally came and they were like, well, that wasn't terrible. And they're like, I'm not a church person, but that was helpful. And oh my goodness, I wish I hadn't brought my kids, because my kids came running up and said, can we come back next week? And I'm like, oh no, we got to come back next week. And now you're a part of this church. You're so grateful that Browns Bridge Church has been an outward facing church. And for those of you who have friends and neighbors and loved ones who are still just kind of resisting God and stiff arming the church, you just know, if I could get them here, if they would just attend on just a few Sundays in a row, you're so grateful this is an outward-facing church because it just feels safer for your friends and family members who have big questions, but again, just have had a bad church experience or they have some idea about church that you know isn't true about your particular church. Now, through the years, in fact, from the very beginning, and I don't want to get into a bunch of stories, but through the years and from the very beginning, we have been criticized for creating these kinds of churches. And the criticism has come from other Christians and other churches. And the criticism isn't, oh, you shouldn't be an outward-facing church. The criticism comes because of what you have to do and what you don't do if you're going to be an outward-facing church. We just do things a little bit different. Not to try to be cool. That was the thing. Oh, you're just trying to be cool. We're not trying to be cool. We're trying to actually reach real people. So we're trying to remove all the unnecessary obstacles to faith. Literally all the unnecessary obstacles to Jesus. So in the old days, the criticism sounded like this. And this is so old. You know, it's almost not even worth saying. You know, well, it doesn't, when we built our first building, it doesn't look like a church. All right, doesn't look like a church. The preacher doesn't dress like a preacher. Okay, we kind of dress down. The music isn't reverent. That was the criticism 28 years ago. Now, thanks to you, no new church buildings look like church buildings. Nobody's wearing a suit and a tie, and all the music's loud at all the churches. So you've ruined church for everybody, okay? Because, and this is kind of going into my world a little bit, so what happens is people see the success of Brownsbridge and look at all these people. It's like, oh, well, we want to have a big church too. And here's what they miss. And here's why we're talking about this. The goal isn't big. The goal isn't quality music or quality preaching. The goal is to be so outward facing that we really have a passion for and concern for people who need Jesus. That's the driving force. So having a cool stage and a cool building, I mean, those were just a means to an end back in the day, and then everybody just jumped on board and the modern church movement was born. Now, my favorite two criticisms that are still criticisms to this day that I'm just gonna talk about one. My favorite two criticisms, this is this one. I heard this all the time. It's so big, they must be doing something wrong. Like if you were really following Jesus and if you were really preaching the gospel, you wouldn't have all those people. I'm like, what? Wait, remember the angels? Good news of great joy for a handful of people. No, good news of great joy for all people. I mean, what? And then you read the book of Acts. I mean, opening day, when the church launched, we're going to talk about that in a few weeks in the series I'm going to do. Opening day was huge. And Jesus said, go ye therefore into all the world. So, and I'm not saying every church needs to be big. I'm just saying when a whole lot of people get together and rally around the teaching of Jesus, that doesn't mean they're doing something wrong. It might mean, just saying, they're doing something right. Okay, anyway. But here's the criticism that kind of leads me to where we're going to end up today. This one is, and I've heard this on multiple ways, but it goes kind of like this. Well, they're not deep. Those churches, I mean, Andy's sermons, they're not deep. They're not deep. Brownsbridge Church, it's just shallow. That's why there's so many people. They're just feeding people milk and cookies. They're not really giving them the deep word, you know. In fact, you go to Brownsbridge Church to become a Christian, but if you want deep teaching, you got to go somewhere else. So I want to talk about this for just a second because this is important, okay? First, let me define deep. You've all been in a swimming pool, right? So the deep really means you can't touch the bottom. That's what deep means. You can't touch the bottom. There's the shallow end where you don't have to exert any effort at all. You just stand there. That's a lot of Christianity. It has nothing to do with teaching. It has nothing to do with information. It has nothing to do with insight. It has to do with I don't have to make any effort. When you can't touch bottom, baby, you are making an effort because if you don't make an effort, you're going to drown. So while there's no deep teaching, there is deep application. Because doing is what makes the difference. When Jesus finished the Sermon on the Mount, he said, anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them in a notebook, no, anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise person who built their life on rock. And building your house on rock takes more time and more effort because it's just more difficult. It's easier to build your life and your house on sand. And he said, when the storm comes, you know, the song, and the rain came down, the floods came up, and the house on the rock stood firm. He says, this is about doing. This is why when Jesus taught, he didn't make it complicated. He told parables. He wanted people to understand. He kept the truth on the low rungs of the ladder, not because it was simplistic, because he wanted people to understand. So there's no such thing as deep teaching. There's confusing teaching that masquerades as deep teaching. I mean, and you've heard this, you know, that somebody just finish up and you're like, wow, that was so deep. And I don't know what they were talking about, but it was so deep. What should we do with that? I don't have any idea. I lost after about 10 minutes. The rest of the time, I was just impressed with how smart they are, but I'm not sure I know what to do with what they just said. And again, follow Jesus through the Gospels. He didn't do that because the kingdom, he brought the kingdom of God to earth and everyone was invited into it. And he said, bring the children, bring everybody. Good news, a great joy for all people. So being deep means you can't touch bottom. So there is deep application, which means there are deep Christians, but deep Christians aren't the Christians that know the most. Deep Christians are the Christians that do the most, because doing is what makes the difference. Again, men, you can go to men's seminars all day long. You can go to marriage seminars all day long, fill up a notebook full of insights about marriage. But if you don't do any of it, it doesn't make any difference in your marriage, right? Ladies, same with you, same with parenting, same with any topic. So doing is what makes the difference. And the deep Christians are the people who are doing something with the teaching of Jesus, because that's what changed the world and that's what continues to impact our culture. And you know a deep Christian when you meet them, because they are the ones that are sacrificing something for the sake of somebody else. Deep Christians, they're the ones who wade out into the deep water of sacrificial application, where they won't survive without God's help. So if you want to be deep, then you need to serve. You need to go do something you're not prepared for. If you want to be deep, you need to become a foster parent. You want to be deep. Some of you have done this. You've adopted children that weren't going to get adopted. That's deep. That's Christianity. That's putting your faith into action. That's what changes lives, and that's ultimately what changes the world. And that has characterized Browns Bridge Church from the very, very beginning. It's why your communities are so glad your church is in this community. We hear that all the time, and hopefully you hear that as well. You want to be deep? Just decide for 3 months you're going to double your giving. You're going to give more money than you've ever given before to organizations changing the world. And as soon as I say that, it's like, exactly. Welcome to deep. Deep is, oh my gosh, I got to tread. I don't know if God doesn't come through. That's the whole point. Deep means, going back to the series I just finished last week, deep means being willing to become a means to an end that doesn't end with you. That's what deep Christians do. And yes, you're going to learn some things along the way, just like you've learned things along the way. But honestly, deep, you know what it requires? It means you do something that stretches you. Do something that stretches your faith. So for some of you, this was your experience. You heard us talking about leading a small group and you thought, oh, we can't do it. But you're like, you felt that nudge. And so you signed up to lead a small group. You signed up to be a small group leader in transit, and you're scared to death of middle schoolers, and you should be. You signed up to be a small group leader in Inside Out for high school students, and they were so intimidating. You're like, God, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And then you got in there and God was faithful. And what happened? Your faith got bigger. And you became a deeper Christian and you were impacting somebody else's life. That's what it means to follow Jesus, and that's what it means to be deep. And that's what has characterized our churches, and that's what characterizes an outward facing church. This isn't deep. That's just Greek. It's not even real Greek. I just took the Greek letters and English letters and made them Greek. It says, this isn't deep. That's what that says. The gifts of the Spirit, you know, Christians get off on the gifts of the Spirit. Listen, read 1 Corinthians. The gifts of the Spirit were given to Christians so that Christians could be a gift to other people. The gifts of the Spirit were given so that Christians could be a gift to the church. And when the gifts of the Spirit become all about me and my gift, you're doing it wrong. Jesus was so clear about all of that. So deep is about deep application. We want our churches to be deep, and we want our churches to be wide. We want them to be deep in terms of sacrificial service, which you're known for, and wide in terms of their love for the world. And yes, theology is important. And this is why over and over and over in our preaching, we come back to this, that the resurrection is what launched the movement that eventually brought us the Bible. It's the event of the resurrection of Jesus that launched the church that eventually brought us our Bible. Jesus is the center of our faith. It's why we're known as Christians, right? And here's something about people who are outside the church. In fact, if you're not a Christian, I'm about to say something that you thought 1,000 times, and you are justified in thinking this. People who aren't Christians are outside the faith, and for those of you who are new Christians, you can relate to this. People outside our faith, they may not be biblically literate, and by that I mean they haven't read the whole Bible, they can't tell you what all the books of the Bible are and where things are found, but here's what they do know. They may not be biblically literate, but they are Jesus literate, meaning they know how Jesus acted and they know how Jesus treated people, and the nerve of them, they expect us to look and to act like Jesus, which they should, because we're Christians. We're Christians. That means we're partisans of Christ. We're followers of a king. So how we behave and how we live our lives and how we handle dating and our marriage and our problems and our, you know, stuff at work, all of that is a part of this. And the men and women who are willing to follow Jesus out into the deep with deep application, sacrificial application, rooted to the teaching of Jesus as given to us through Scripture and his understanding of the Old Testament, the whole Bible, that's what it means to be a deep and wide church. And that's what you've been from the very beginning. Now, we will continue to be criticized for this, and that's okay. And I don't mean to be snarky, but you know, when I, you know, all the arrows are in my back. You know, non-Christians, they love you. They like us. It's just the Christians sometimes like, And when I kind of get frustrated with the Christian community, I say, you know what? Sandra and I have this conversation all the time. When we get to heaven, we'll work all that out. But I don't have time to stop and sort all that out now. We got work to do. We're supposed to go into all the world and make disciples of all nations, of all generations, of all kinds of people. So we're gonna have our theological differences. That's fine. We're probably all wrong about a lot of things anyway. But what we're right about and what we're clear about is what Jesus called us to do. And the Christians who are forward-facing and the churches that are forward-facing are healthy. They're dynamic. They leave a footprint, they leave a fingerprint, and even the you know, people in culture who don't necessarily love the church, it's just hard to resist somebody who loves you. It's hard to resist somebody who's kind to you. It's hard to resist you to somebody who you consider them an enemy, but they won't consider you an enemy. They just keep loving you anyway, and that's what we've been called to do. So your influence in this community is way bigger than you think. But here's what I want to brag on you about a little bit. Your influence isn't just about this community. You have an international footprint. You've made an international impression. And I want to give you some details about some things that you should be so excited about, because just like Adam a few minutes ago talked about this event that's happening in the community with our students that are mirroring and helping these other students put on this Broadway production. You were like, we didn't even know we were doing that. Here's something else you probably don't know about. Several years ago, over 10 years ago, we launched a church network outside of our local church network called the Irresistible Church Network, or ICN for short. And so many, many, many churches in the country run our model and do the kinds of things we do. They preach some of our sermons. They're saying, hey, we want to be an outward-facing church. Help us do that. So there's probably 100 churches in the United States now that are part of that network. But a few years ago, we launched an international version of that because more and more pastors from all over the world were saying, hey, our country needs that kind of church. Will you help us do this in our context? And we're like, well, look, you know your culture better than we do. So here's our stuff. You can have it for free. Here's the model. Here's the preaching. Here's the teaching. Here's the children's environments. And so currently, we have Irresistible Church Networks in the UK, Latin America, Australia, and South Africa. These aren't four churches. These are four networks of churches who have come together in those cultures to copy and to learn from you. And the reason churches join these networks is they come to the United States and they see you. And once they see what you're doing, they are so messed up. They cannot go back and do normal church anymore. They are wrecked and they are ruined, and they go back to their culture and they're like, goodness. So we have staff that are facilitating these church networks all over the world. So this past October, I went down to Monterrey, Mexico, because the other things these networks are doing, they're doing conferences to attract other churches in their culture to be become irresistible churches. So every other year we do a conference here called Drive. Some of you have helped us do Drive. In fact, it's coming up in May. Churches from all over the country come and we do show and tell, and we say, here's what we've learned. Go back and do this in your own home. So three of these networks have already begun doing their own conference. So this past October, I went down to Monterrey, Mexico for the conference. So I got there on a Sunday afternoon. Because of the time change, I was able to go to, I went to their worship service at Vida Inn. Vida Inn's the church that hosted the conference there in Monterrey. And I sat through a worship service, and I told Sandra that afternoon, I said, if all I did was fly down here and experience this worship service and come home, it was worth it. It was so powerful. I couldn't understand a word. It's all in Spanish, you know? And I just sat there and watched hundreds of people crammed into this building that they have leased, and they have decked it out. It looks like a miniature Browns Bridge church. And then the next day, the conference started. So I want to show you some pictures just to inspire you to show what an inspiration you've been. Here's some pictures. This is a picture from the conference. Look at the stage, lighting, same kind of stuff you do. The Monterrey church does Be Rich. In fact, most of our international churches do their own Be Rich. They raise money and give it away. And where do they learn to do that? They learn to do that from you. And about 20% of the money that you give to Be Rich goes to fund some international initiatives. And these churches have taken some of that money and they have become the heroes in their community because of your generosity. It was an irresistible conference. So on Monday when the conference started, here's their big sign and their building and all these incredible 500 and something leaders. You're going to love this picture. Does this look familiar? You got a yellow vest, they got a yellow vest. You got flags, they got flags. You got umbrellas, they learned this from you. No churches in their cultures were even thinking about this. This is the parking team from the church in Brazil. This church is amazing. In fact, go to that next picture. This is a shot of the Brazilian church. This isn't even their main auditorium. So the pastor in Brazil, He was a young guy, super talented guy. He speaks Portuguese and Spanish, no English. So when I communicated with him, I was speaking English to a Spanish person that was speaking Portuguese. Super sharp guy. So he takes a church in Brazil and he builds it up to it's about 350 people attending this church. Then he came to the Drive Conference and saw what you're doing as we sort of do show and tell at the Drive Conference a few years ago, and he was so messed up. He's like, oh no, we're doing it all wrong. He took our model, went back to Brazil, grew the church from 300 to 100, and now there's 4,000 people attending multiple churches that he's planted, yes. Because, here's a picture of Inside Out at the Vida Inn Church. Here's a picture of Transit. They even use our logos and everything. And then here's a picture of Upstreet, some children and the large group. And then some of you are going to love this picture. Look at this. There they are on the floor with the same. They do what you do. The point being, you are their inspiration. These church leaders, because they're great leaders, they just have to see it. And once they see it, they can't unsee it. And they go back to their environments and they're like, we've got to do this if we're gonna reach our culture. And we say, you contextualize it, you know your culture better than we do. So I say all that to say, you're their inspiration. Your presence is felt all over the world every single weekend. So why do I tell you all that? Because this is why we, and I'm not, this isn't that you, this isn't a get with it, this is a stay with it. This is why we have to continue to be outward-facing churches, and we can't let the gravitational pull of the church cause us to turn back toward ourselves and it just be about our four or our 400 or our 2,000 and no more. Because there are people all over the world watching, and you are giving them life, you are giving them permission, you're giving them ideas, and I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what? No, I just try to get a parking spot, and I get you in upstreet, and I get you in transit. I tell my son, get my seat, and then we try to beat the traffic. We're not changing the world. Yes, your participation here, and those of you who volunteer here, and those of you who give your extra time, and those of you who are in the deep end, treading water, God, I don't think I can do this. God, I don't think I can do this. And then God comes through for you. You are making an impact beyond your family, beyond this community, because of what's happening all around the world. And you've been doing this for years, and that's why we gotta keep going. So we, years ago, took a verse out of the book of Acts that's sort of become our marching orders. It's in Acts chapter 15. I'm just gonna show you this one verse. And here's why this became our marching orders. In Acts chapter 15, there's an incident. It takes place about 20 years after the resurrection. So Jesus rose from the dead, 20 years go by, and the church is having some struggles in Jerusalem because it's predominantly Jewish. Meanwhile, in Antioch, hundreds of Gentiles, that's non-Jewish people like most of us, have put their faith in Jesus and want to follow Jesus. And the church in Jerusalem is like, well, they got to do Torah and the dietary laws, and the men have to have a little surgery, and you got to become Jewish before you can become Christian, because Jesus is our Messiah. And the Apostle Peter and the Apostle Paul, who'd seen all these Christians in Antioch, you know, say, hey, we have no king but Jesus, they're like, no, we can't expect these people to become Jewish before they become Christians. And you know, Peter gives this speech, and the Apostle Paul gives the speech. They have this business meeting, and it's kind of back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And at one point, one of them says, look, he says to the Jewish people there, look, you can hardly be a good Jew. It's so hard. And you were raised on this. Imagine us trying to go tell all these Gentile Christians, you have to understand Torah. And anyway, so at the end of the meeting, James, the brother of Jesus, who is the pastor of the church in Jerusalem, stands up and says, okay, I've made a decision. He has that kind of authority. I love this verse. This verse is all over our halls and our offices. It's on plaques. This is kind of right down the middle. He says this, it is my judgment, because he's calling, where the meeting's over, I'm making a decision. It is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. In other words, I've decided we're gonna remove every unnecessary obstacle between unbelievers and Jesus. Anything that's a possible detour, anything that's a possible off-ramp. I mean, if they're gonna be offended by anything, let's make sure they're just offended by one thing. You're a sinner in need of a savior. If that's offensive, that's fine. You can be offended by that. But let's not add anything that makes it more complicated. Let's not do anything to make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. And so they did. They decided. They went back and they wrote this incredible letter. It's in the book of Acts, chapter 15, and said to the Gentiles in Antioch, you're in. If you put your faith in Jesus, and if you'll be sensitive to the sensitivities of your Jewish brothers and sisters, on we go. And instead of two churches, there was one church. And the next verse after the end of this meeting says, and many people were added to the church in that day. So that's what we've been doing. And that's what you've been doing. And sometimes it's messy. And sometimes, you know, we get kind of in a, you know, little conflict with some things other Christians think we should do. And we don't have the market on this. And we're not going to do it perfect. And as long as Adam and I are involved, it's not going to be perfect. But we are absolutely committed. That is the North Star for Browns Bridge Church. That's the North Star for our churches. We don't wanna make it unnecessarily difficult for anybody. That's why the environments that you create, that's why the volunteering that you do, that's why what we do for children and students, that's why we take chances. It's why sometimes we make mistakes. It's sometimes why we kind of miss the mark in our effort to be outward facing. But if we're going to err, let's err in that direction, not the other direction. And here's what happens when a church is an outward-facing church. There's less drama because Christians don't argue about stupid stuff. I have been in churches where they argued about stupid stuff. They spend time and time and time and money arguing about stupid stuff. Meanwhile, the world's just ignoring them. But when a group of people come together and take seriously the Great Commission and the marching orders of Jesus, they are so focused, they don't have time to squabble over silly things. The other thing that happens is this: they attract like-minded Christians, thoughtful Christians who wanna be on that same kind of crusade to impact the world. And ultimately, you shape your reputation in the community. I love this phrase. This came from, Susie Gray, who helps us with our broadcast stuff, was talking to a gentleman, and he had some ideas, and he was being generous to our church. And she asked him, she said, and he's in his 70s, and she was kind of shocked by how forward-thinking he was as a Christian. And she said, you know, where is this coming from? And he said this, he says, because I believe everybody means everybody. I love that. Everybody means everybody. So removing the obstacles is what we've done through the years. For those of you, there's somebody running my slides. I want to skip over to where I talk about endear the community. Can you go to that slide that says endear the community? Here's what, get there in a second. This is, they're having to skip through a bunch of stuff. Yeah, there it is. This is what you have done so well. Because part of what it means to be an outward-facing church is to think beyond the borders of the church plant or the church building. This is what you've done so well. We have a phrase, one of our imperatives that we use for our staff that I just haven't talked much about in church that goes like this. We want people to know we're here, to be happy we're here, and to be better off because we're here. We want people to know that Brownsbridge Community Church is here. We want people to be happy Brownsbridge Church is here, and we want the people to think they're better off, the community is better off because Brownsbridge Church is here. And I'm telling you, you are doing that. What you've done in terms of multiplying foster families in the county has been fantastic. What you've done in the school systems has been fantastic. The money that you've given to Be Rich has been fantastic. And let me say something about Be Rich real quick. Seems like old news, but we did our Be Rich campaign in September. At the end of September, when we celebrated Be Rich, remember we do a Sunday where we show all the numbers and everybody claps because of all the money you've given. The dollar amount that had been given at the celebration was $8,023,000, which is extraordinary. But people didn't stop giving. By the end of the year, our churches together gave over $9.5 million that we turned right around and give away to communities and what's going on in the world. Isn't that amazing? So when the church stays focused, on the mission that Jesus originally gave the church, our behavior and the way we love each other and the way we love people in the community is the message. It's not the sermon. In fact, I'm a professional Christian, you know, I read all these statistics and get buried in all this geeky stuff. And here's what surveys say time after time after time. That when a person walks into a church for the first time, they have already decided if they're coming back before the sermon ever begins, based on what they experience in the parking lot, in the foyer, and how they're treated before when they finally get their seat. That before the sermon ever begins, they have already decided if they're coming back. You know what that means for you and means for me? It means that every single one of us, every single Sunday we walk into a church building, we are part of the message. The message starts in the parking lot. So if I could encourage/push you just a little bit, because I know how this goes. When you show up on Sunday, and I get it. I mean, we have three kids, and I remember the days that if we could, she does not have on a shoe. Oh, he has on her shoe. Oh, that is just great. So here we are trying to walk in and get her. And you get in Wombalana, don't you embarrass your dad. And finally, Sandra sits down and is like, I get it, okay? Sunday morning is not the, wrinkle-free, experience that you make it look like when you finally get here. And everybody's happy and taking photos, okay? So I get that. And sometimes parking is a problem. And sometimes I get it. But with all that in mind, if you can show up on Sunday morning with this mindset, I am part of the message of my church. In other words, how people experience you in the community and how people experience you when we come together is the message, because people will be open to the message of Jesus if they feel loved by the people who say they follow Jesus. And I know you don't want to be a hypocrite, and I don't either, and I am a professional apologizer. Oh my goodness, the apologies I've made in my life, both professionally and personally. So we're all going to mess that up from time to time. But if you can show up and think a little bit less about where you park and where you sit, even if you're not, quote, a an actual volunteer. And to walk in the doors with your kids or to walk in the doors with your husband or on your own or looking for your friends and think, okay, I'm part of this. Because about 10 to 12% of the people who walk in on any Sunday to Brownsbridge Church, they're walking in for the first or second time. And they're deciding whether or not they come back. And they're deciding whether or not we really mean what we say. And they're deciding whether or not they can trust me or Adam or whoever's preaching based on their experience with you. And I say that because that is so easy to forget. That's easy for all of us to forget. One of the best things you could do, if you're not volunteering anywhere, one of the best things you could do is to volunteer on guest services, even just for a few months, and to stand there and to watch people walk through the doors and to look for the ones that look for a sign, because that means they don't know where they're going. And to look for people, I'm telling you, it'll just give you a different appreciation. And the people who come here, they need to see themselves. If you're young, they need to see young people. If you're old, they need to see old people. If you're a mixed race marriage, they need to see mixed race marriage. If you've got kids, they need to see people. They need to see themselves. When people see themselves, they're like, oh, maybe this place is for us. All that to say, you're on a mission every single Sunday, both in the community and here. And I'm not chastising you. You're killing it. In fact, I wrote this in my notes. When people ask me about Brownsbridge Church, I'm just gonna read what I wrote. In addition to bragging about your leadership, because you have extraordinary staff leadership and volunteer leadership, and in addition to bragging on your leadership and impact on this community, which is major, I often say Brownsbridge Church, drama-free. Drama-free, drama-free. Here's why that's a compliment. Because churches are often drama centers. So much drama. And do you know why you're drama-free? Because you're outward focused. You just aren't worried by the silly things. And I don't want that to ever change here. And you control whether or not that continues to be the reality. When I served here, I served here for almost 2 years as lead pastor, which was wonderful. And I remember after the first week, even just a couple of weeks of preaching and then being in the office and meeting the staff, I told Sandra, I'm like, this is not making this up. I'm like, goodness, those people get it. They just understand. They just do the thing and they love each other. It's seamless. And that continues to be the case. And again, that's a reflection of leadership, but it's a reflection of a group of people who understand what's at stake. And I don't want you to ever lose that. So I just came today to basically say, keep going. And if you do, Jesus has made you a promise. And I want to end with this. This is in the Great Commission in Matthew 28. Matthew 28, you know, Jesus has his followers there together and his brothers are there, you know, and they've not really been followers. But, you know, when you watch your brother crucified and then you see him 3 days later, it's like, oh, I think we were wrong about brother Jesus, okay? Anyway, so that's, you know, if you wonder why do we think Jesus is the Son of God, his brothers thought he was their Lord. Okay, what would it take for your brother to be your Lord? Exactly, okay. So anyway, never you say, wow, that's the point. So anyway, he's gathered with the disciples and all these, and the apostles and the women and his mom's there. And he gives them this commission, I want you to go into the world, make disciples. And they're like, the world? I mean, these people have traveled maybe 20, 25 miles from home. The world? Yes. This isn't for Jerusalem, it's for the world. And I want you to teach them everything I've taught you. Just what you've taught us. Yeah, just teach them what I've taught you so they'll be followers of me. And then he makes his promise. He says, and if you do, this is not a general promise. This is not a promise to all Christians. Preachers preach it like it's a promise to all Christians. It's not. He says, and if you'll do that, here it is, surely I am with you. Surely I am with you because you're on mission with me. Surely I am with you because you're with me. Surely I'm with you because you're following me. Surely I'm with you because you're doing what I ask you to do. I'm gonna be with you because I know in your effort to make disciples, you're with me. Surely I'm with you always to the very end of the church age. That's what you want. In your personal life, that's what you want corporately. And that's what you've been doing. And I just came today to say, keep going. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for this extraordinary group of people who are doing extraordinary things in these communities, in the school systems, with children, with adults, with those in need. And Father, I do pray you would continue to raise up extraordinary people in this community to be a part of this church to keep doing what they're doing. Thank you for the promise that you are with us. You're with us when it works. You're with us when it doesn't work. You're with us when we have a good day at church and go home and things are chaotic. You're with us when our marriages are bumping along and it's just not what we hoped it would be. You're with us when our children are bumping along and just aren't doing what we hoped they would do. You're with us. And Father, I pray that we would experience that as we love each other, as we're in group together, as we serve together. And I pray, Father, for all of our churches and our international churches that we would never, ever, 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 ever just join hands and look at each other. But that as we join hands, we are outward facing. Because for God so loved the world, he moved in our direction. And we did not deserve it. And we were a mess. So give us eyes to see and ears to hear. And Father, this song we're about to sing, I pray these words would be reflected in our lives because we have been the recipient of your love. In Jesus' name, amen.